You're listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast, episode 251. Can Cruella De Vil sue Roger? Welcome to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, the number one place to get your animation fix with animation addicts just like you. Each episode, we dive into the wonderful world of animation featuring Disney, DreamWorks, Pixar, and everything in between. From hilarious discussions and movie reviews to interviews with industry insiders, this show's mission is to brighten your day through our love of animation. So hop on your nerdy couch, grab some snacks, and get ready to hang out with your animation besties, because it's time to dive into today's episode. Hey there, animation addicts. I'm your host, Morgan Stradling.
And I am Chelsea Robson.
Chelsea, have you been keeping up with the Amber Heard versus Johnny Depp defamation case?
I have. I have indeed.
And what are your
thoughts?
I don't
know very many people who haven't.
I know. If you're online, you're following this.
I mean, I'm just going to put it out there. It is a circus. Like, the entire thing is a complete circus, but it's one of those car wrecks that you just can't look away from. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I have definitely been watching it.
Yeah, this is a very interesting defamation case. And as I was watching it, I was thinking, you know what? This would make a great nerdy couch discussion. Or okay. Something somewhat related. I've actually had this idea in my head for a while, which is, you know, Roger sings this amazing song called Cruella De Vil, and it's about Cruella De Vil. And he's really beating up on her in this song. And so I thought, you know what? Could she sue him for defamation? So here we go. Nerdy couch discussion time. Let's talk about the great defamation case of Cruella De Vil versus Roger.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PI, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Cruella De Vil, is she a public figure? Because if we're talking about defamation, typically if you're a public figure, you're kind of fair game. That's why in a lot of songs you might hear references to like different celebrities or whatnot. And
President.
And yeah, you can, it's a lot of like a lot of rap songs, a lot of pop songs. Yeah, they'll just kind of like throw a name out there, right?
Yeah.
It's unclear in the movie. And so I kind of broke down, you know, where we are. I think you and I, we'll discuss it and then we'll come to a consensus on is she or isn't she. So in the 1961 animated film, it's clear that she's old school friends with Anita. And I don't know about you, but when I was a kid, this never made sense to me. Because Cruella is freaking old. And Anita is young, youthful, and beautiful. So moral of the story, just don't do drugs, kids. Okay?
Dearly devoted.
I just don't buy it.
Maybe she went back for her college degree. So here's the thing. I did some online courses and there was one of my dearly devoted old schoolmates, friends, who's we're like 30 years different.
Yeah.
I sang at her daughter's wedding kind of thing. Like, yeah. And so there was like this on campus event that we went to, and she was also from out of town and I was from out of town. So we met up and we actually were roommates, mm-hmm. you know, quote unquote, like we shared a hotel room during this event. And so she jokes around that we were roommates in college. So it could make sense. I see that.
Okay. Yeah. It's a bit of a stretch, but nonetheless, they are dearly devoted old schoolmates. So fine, I will take that as canon because that's what's presented to us.
Right.
So in the original novel, she's a pampered and glamorous London heiress. Obviously, she's the former schoolmate of Mrs. Dearly, which is the name in the book of Anita.
No.
Davies. I think Roger Davies is what they...
Huh.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. They changed the name in the 1961 version. But... they describe her as the last descendant of a prosperous and notorious family. She appears to be wealthy, but is heavily in debt. Okay. So that's the original novel. So, you know, you can sometimes take elements of that and maybe it's still relevant to the movie. We're going to talk just about the movie version. So in the movie version, really all we know is that all they give us is she appears to have wealth. You know, she has DeVille Manor, but it's DeVille
run
Hall.
Down.
It's run very run down. You know, she has these furs and coats and whatnot, but they really don't talk about her money explicitly. And anyway, there was a really funny article in 2002. Forbes ranked Disney's Cruella as the 13th wealthiest fiction character. We're talking all fiction. Citing that the single 65-year-old, and here's another thing, 65 years old. Anita is not 65 years old. So I'm not, again, I don't get how they became schoolmates.
It was also an online class, Morgan.
Right. It says that she has a net worth of $875 million obtained through inheritance. Now, I will say, where did they get this number? What on earth? I don't know if they're referring to other versions of the of this series, because the 1996 version has her being a pampered and glamorous London heiress and fashion designer. So she's the heiress, as we see in the original novel, but they add the fashion designer element on top of it. So I feel like it's taking elements from that one as well, because I just am not getting $875 million from her. Okay. Not getting those vibes. Anyways. So based on all of this, you and I, Chelsea, in the 1961 version, is she a public figure?
I don't think she is.
I don't think she is either. From the information we're giving.
She has a cool car, a great coat, and a rundown manor.
Yes.
So I can understand where they could have gotten the net worth of somebody, because you may own a lot of property and a lot of land. Your house rich, but money poor.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see how that could be a thing if she's heavily in debt, you know, but she still has all of these properties and everything that she's using as collateral, maybe. So I can see the number, but I really don't think that she's anything more than that, because, you know, like, people know the house, but it's hard not to know the house.
Yeah.
The old DeVille place, like
Hell Hall.
It's down the street. It's large and it's in the countryside. But just because you have a big house, does that mean you're a public figure?
No. There's lots of people with big houses that we don't have no idea who they are.
That's true. I'm going to say no. I'm going to say she is not a public figure, which means that she has more of a case against him.
Yes. 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 Okay. So before we go and who are we calling up on the stand and we're actually in the court, it's important to look at the law regarding this. Now, for U.S. law, which this is set in Britain, so wouldn't even apply, according to Wikipedia, under common law, to constitute defamation, a claim must generally be false and have been made to someone other than the person defamed. So you have to say something false and make it to someone other. It can't just be like, I hate you, or you're a horrible person, or and say that to that person's face directly.
Right.
So that's pretty vague. And in the U.S., for defamation, Cruella is the one that has to actively prove in court that she's harmed by the song. So she has to proactively go this. If she's enough of a public figure, you hit a certain level of notoriety where you're just open to kind of parody, where anything can be considered a parody. So she would have to claim the claims in the song were false and unrepresentative of her, which is interesting because the song was written, you know, in the early part of the movie, and a lot of the things that are said actually happen and become true over the course of the movie.
Yeah.
We'll talk about the actual accusations later, but so that's the U.S. Okay. So she has to go and prove it. And on top of that, basically that this caused her harm, limited her money-making opportunities, or hurt her in some way, that because mm-hmm. of this specifically, she was unable to get work or get more jobs, or it affected, you know, her livelihood.
Yeah.
Okay. So from the British, now, Chelsea, when I was initially talking with her, she's like, okay, well, you go and you do the research of 1960s British defamation law. And I was like, okay, but I didn't.
There's gotta be a book.
I didn't go down that rabbit hole. So in general, this is the, in modernity, here is the British perspective. And this is probably okay. the one that matters more because of the jurisdiction of where this is. So right. English law is particularly different than American law. The onus of proof isn't on the person who claims they were defamed, but the person allegedly guilty of the defamation. So it's complete opposite in the UK, where the person who did the defamation, or allegedly, they mm-hmm. must prove that their work does not defame the person in question. And I think this is really interesting that it's so different.
Yeah.
So it's,
yeah.
So in this case, it would be on Roger to do all the work and show, and it just doesn't. It seems the other way around, the person who's being defamed has more skin in the game, I guess, to yeah. really like show. And they know like the specifics, like how would Roger know the inner workings of Cruella's business dealings? I had a contract for $20 million for this. And, you know, because of this song, they cut me and they told me it was because, you know, how would he know that? So that just seems a lot harder to prove.
Yeah.
So in this case, Roger needs to prove that his work does not defame Cruella. So I just a big, okay. And in general, these laws need to be applied. Are they only really applied to people who make these claims as informative fact? For example, journalists, for newspapers, documentaries. Mm-hmm. It's people who are supposed to be reporting on the truth. Saying like, this is a fact. Really in Britain, it seems like, from what I've read, I mean, I may be totally wrong, but this is what I've dug up, that they're really the only ones that are able to, you're able to come and do a defamation case. So really the idea of going against an entertainer or a songwriter just wouldn't normally happen in the UK. Yeah.
Okay. So that's probably why this case never came to fruition.
She was in jail and had other things on her mind, you know.
Right.
So let's jump down to the actual song, okay? You know, if this is satire, well, then that alone kind of vindicates it because, you know, satire, you can get away with a lot. But, you know, you have to specifically say that the lyrics, that they're not just an opinion, but they're explicitly stating something that false. This person did,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, with the Amber Heard case, there's specific allegations of abuse both ways that were claimed. And I'm not going to give my opinions on that case. It's for another day. But hashtag justice for Johnny. But this is a little different. So I'm gonna sing you the song, okay?
Okay,
Cruella
cool.
DeVille. Okay, maybe I won't. Cruella DeVille, if she doesn't scare you, no evil thing will. So I highlighted, you know, if she doesn't scare you, no evil thing will. Again, that kind of seems like an opinion. That's not a fact of anything presented that she had done. Next up, to see her is to take a sudden chill. Cruella. Okay, so to see her is to make you freak out. Okay, great. Again, speculation or opinion.
Speculation, yeah. Hearsay.
Yes.
Hearsay.
The curl of her lips, the ice of her, in her stare, the innocent children had better beware. So basically saying that she is a threat to children.
Okay, see, that's something that could be...
More so. But it's not... There's no specific...
Right. Is it insinuating anything, though? That's the question.
Right.
And I don't think it
is.
I don't know who would have to. It's more of like be afraid of her just as like a scary thing.
Yeah. And if you're a kid, like definitely be scared. Yeah. She's like a spider waiting for the kill. Look out for Cruella DeVille. So again, just making a comparison.
Metaphor, yeah. Not.
At first, you think Cruella is a devil, but after time has worn away the shock, you come to realize you've seen her kind of eyes watching you from underneath a rock.
So is he saying that she has spied on him or has. Trying to steal his identity. I don't know.
Like,
what is that insinuating? Trespassing?
Mm-hmm. I don't get any specific allegation of something that she's doing. It's just kind of like you come to realize.
You've seen her kind of eyes.
You've seen this kind of before. It's not you've seen her eyes watching you from the rock. You've seen something like it, you know, and calling her the devil. I mean, your name is Deville. And your license plate says if without the space, basically devil. So, I mean, that's something that she kind of is leaning into anyway, I would say.
Right.
Just due to the nature of her last name. This vampire bat, this inhuman beast, she ought to be locked up and never released. Again, that's she ought to be. It's not necessarily stating, but he said
speculation.
He is saying that she's a vampire bat and an inhuman beast. I mean, of all of the lyrics, it seems like that is the most concrete as far as an accusation. But even then, it's like, okay, I'm not sure anyone believes that she's a bat, and that's even then that could be metaphor because no one believes that she's a vampire bat,
right?
Yeah.
Or an inhuman beast. Like, yes. She's not, if you're looking at literally, okay, nobody's believing that.
Yeah. The world was such a wholesome place until Cruella de Vil.
Speculation, once again.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there we go. That's the allegations. And it seems pretty weak. So if we were to go to court with this, I mean, there's the argument for her winning this lawsuit and the argument against. So if you were on Team Cruella, and who would you call to the stand? How would you fight this?
So we only know her two minions, Horace and Jasper, and she could pay them to say whatever they want. Exactly. She wants, and they have no scruples. They would do it under oath. Doesn't matter. So that's who she would call to the stand. So can she prove damages, even though everything is speculation? Can this still be proven that he ruined her career? Because if she is a fashion designer, then all of this is opinion. So it's really hard for her to come up and make a real powerful case that it changed her ability to make money.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes people would be able to use this as, you know, if you have news about me, it means that my name is in your head, and then I can use that for my benefit later on. But if she really wants to prove defamation, she would bring Horace and Jasper up. She could also bring up the nanny and say, have I done anything? Is there anything that I have done that would have constituted me saying that I need to stay away from innocent children? Well, it depends on if it's before or after she stole the puppies. And before or after she said that the puppies pooped on her bed. Wait, that didn't happen. I mean, you just don't know. Did it happen or didn't it? She could have a photograph. I think Roger still is in the safe in this scenario.
I think so, too. I think really the lyrics, all it comes down to is these were opinion, speculation. And there wasn't anything concrete that was alleged to happen. I'd say that if she took him to court, even under British law, he would win. So she can sue him, if that's the question. Yeah. The original question was, can she sue him? You can sue anyone for anything.
Yeah,
now, whether it gets, you know, accepted and you win is a different story. And I think in this case, sorry, Cruella, not going to happen. You lose.
Who else could she have called to the stand? I mean, she could have called her dearly beloved schoolmate.
Yeah, it just wouldn't happen. Anita wouldn't do it. She has no allegiance to her. She has very little.
Right.
She is more sympathetic to her than Roger, for sure. Roger just doesn't see her. We all have that, like, you know, your friend's friend or like a boyfriend or whatever, where you're just like, I don't get it. Like, this is your friend and you love them, but like, I don't get why. So that's for sure with them.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to say that she doesn't have much of a case. However, she would definitely try. And especially with after all of the money, more money they could ever dreamed of. Was made on this song, I'm sure that she could have swung something, or at least she would have tried.
I think she would have tried. In this universe, Cruella tried to sue because she wanted that sweet, sweet royalty money.
Right.
And, you know, she failed. Do you think this even went to court?
I would hope not. But you never know these days.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think she was in jail, so I don't think this ever really went anywhere. And he was just living on his Dalmatian plantation with all that sweet, sweet musical royalty money. So right. Good times for Roger. Way to go. You were a struggling musician and you finally hit the big one. It only takes one.
It does.
And even sweeter, Roger, was just the sweetness of the being able to dig the knife into Cruella, how much he hates her and despises her through song.
I mean, the thing is, he didn't hate and despise her. He just was annoyed by her.
Uh-huh.
And it happened to be that her name fit really catchy tune that he came up with. I think it was kind of rude of him to do so, not having known her at all. But after everything happened and she actually stole these puppies, then I would say, you know what? She ought to be locked up.
Yeah.
Come on.
Especially since she was a public figure. If she were, then she, you know, he definitely would be able to say even more of these things and totally be fine. But I think under what we've investigated, she was not in this case. She was not a public figure. She was an old schoolmate. So there you have it. Morgan and Chelsea were on the case. We figured it out. Yes. Cruella de Vil can sue Roger, but it was not successful. Sorry, guys. But yay, Team Roger. Justice for Roger.
I object. Justice for Roger.
Good times. Good times. That's all we have for this episode of the Animation Addicts podcast. This is one of our nerdy couch discussion episodes where we just have a fun time nerding out about various fun animation tropes. If you have an idea for a nerdy couch discussion, definitely let us know. We give first pick to the patrons. They get to submit their ideas for a nerdy couch discussion. So if you're interested, go to roscovers.com/Patreon to check out all the perks of being a patron. And again, thank you to all of the patrons of the show. We appreciate your support and we love you guys. So before we go, we do have a quick voicemail that we want to play, and it is from Megan.
Hi, Rotoscopers. This is Megan from Virginia. I just watched The Bad Guys in theaters and listened to your podcast, and I definitely agree with you that it was a really great movie, and I really enjoyed it as well. I have so many questions about the movie. One is, why is everybody cool with just anthropomorphic animals living amongst people, and they're just like part of society? Why is the Sam Rockwell wolf so attractive? What is the deal with the shark and the piranha just not being around people and everything? It's so many things, but we don't really have to nitpick it or talk about it. It's just accepted in the canon of the world, and I think that's great. But one of the great things I love about this movie was the stylized animation that they had. I think that for so long, there were so many animated films that focused really heavily on trying to be realistic with animation, like getting the water really, really right in like Finding Nemo, or you know, the live action, quote unquote, Lion King that really is fully animated and not live action at all. You know, we've learned that we can get hyper realistic animation. And I think that the fact that we have achieved that makes it so much more interesting for animated movies these days to like have to make stylized choices. And I thought that the stylized animation in this movie was really interesting, you know, akin to things like Mitchell versus Machines and, Into the Spider-Verse, where, you know, it was just, there were very clear animation choices that were made. So just, you know, really wanted to applaud the movie on that. Loved the voice acting, loved a lot of things about it, the humor, it was all great. Yeah, just like hearing you guys talk about it as well. And I hope that you have a great rest of your week. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you so much, Megan. So you had some very interesting points. First off, why is everyone cool with the anthropomorphic characters in The Bad Guys? Exactly, right? It's weird. It's not really explained, but it just works. It doesn't need an explanation. It's like, it's very clearly says like, these are the characters that you need to care about in a way, because there are a few human characters that are important to the plot as well, but it's funny. I really would love to know why they decided to make that happen. And I'd be interested to see if the graphic novels maybe were done in that way as well.
I mean, the way it makes sense to me is that even though like all of these are from fairy tales, all of these tropes are from fairy tales, and we the humans tell these fairy tales to our children, and so they are, in essence, we're telling stories about real care, like real animals in the society. Mm-hmm. So looking at it that way makes sense to me, but yeah, that's basically the story I tell myself.
So the next thing she talks about is, why is Sam Rockwell's wolf so attractive? Yes. Right? I mean, I think this is one of the main things that people have been saying, and it's almost kind of a cliche at this point, is that he's just kind of this generic cool guy, bad guy.
Yeah.
Person. But it's the voice, it's the clothes, it's just the swagger that he has. And I hate to bring this, I hate to bring this up, but there is this article that I saw, and it just like, why do we be this way, people? And I am not associating myself with this, but there is an article that came out around the time the movie was released in Rolling Stone. And it says, I almost don't even want to read it. If you have kids in the room, I think this is the only time I've ever had a disclaimer, but it says, when do we get to see Mr. Wolf's expletive? Why some furries are losing it for the bad guys? And when I saw that, I was just like rubbing my head like, we can be better, guys. We can be better. Come on. So that's a real thing. I'll include a link in the show notes if you're interested.
if you so desire.
And it's just
as proof that this actually happened.
Like, okay, there's one thing to say, oh, he's hot and he's super attractive and he's just such an appealing character. But it's another to take it to that level where we need to see it almost definitely pornographic. I'm like, guys, that's a no. That's a no for me, dog.
Yeah.
So, yeah, moving right along. Megan talks about, like, what's the deal with shark and piranha not being able to be in water? Like, yeah, that doesn't really work out too well. That's why one of them should have been a skunk.
Yeah.
But yeah. And then the last point she kind of talks about is she just really loved the stylized animation for such a long time. There's been such this focus on hyper real, like how close to realistic can we get? And I really love with this, they're just pulling back and they're like, okay, we've really advanced computer animation quite far. If you have the budget, obviously. Yeah. How can we pull it back and make it unique and its own thing? And I really think it just did such a great job. And the bad guys, it's just done really well at the box office. I'm just so happy for it. It's coming out on Blu-ray soon and digital, and we're going to be getting a press package. And they're like, hey, do you want one? I'm like, abso-freaking-lutely. I love it.
Abso-freaking-lutely.
So thank you so much, Megan, for sending in that voicemail. If you want to leave your voicemail, we are going to be doing a voicemail mailbag show where all of the voicemails, we're just going to do it as a big grab bag. In the future. So send a voicemail on any topic, whether it's something we discussed in a previous episode or just a random animation topic you would like to discuss, go to rotoscopers.com/voicemails. You can also give us a call at 406-646-6575. Now with that, our next episode is going to be a fun one. We are going to be reviewing Chicken Little as part of our
Flying Fowl series.
So we're doing Chicken Little, followed by Swan Princess 9 and 10, which in Swan Princess 9 and 10, there really is no fowl. Odette doesn't turn into a swan in that, but it's just because it has swan in the title. We're like, yeah, sure, why not? We wanted to talk about these ones anyway. But ignore that, guys. It's going to be a fun discussion for sure, because those moves are surprisingly good. But before we get to that, we will be talking about Chicken Little, so get ready. Good time going back to 2005. So with that, that's all we have for today. Until next time, we are the Rotoscopers.
Like the next one out?
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you have another...
No, it's fine. Hold on.
I didn't know if you had a...
Okay. Yeah, I know. Ugh. What, babe? Okay. She was barking at my door.
You've been listening to the Animation Addicts podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe and be sure to leave us a 5-star review. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you want to help spread the word, be sure to share the podcast with your friends on social media. Just don't forget to tag us at Rotoscopers on Instagram and use the hashtag AnimationAddicts. For all the links and full show notes for this episode, go to rotoscopers.com/podcast. Now, if you still can't get enough for your animation fix, be sure to subscribe to us on YouTube and visit rotoscopers.com for more animation news, reviews, and interviews. Thanks for listening.